So looking at this passage today, looking at the Israelites, what we can learn from the Israelites, and I've picked four verses that I wanted to take something from each one of these. Try to avoid verse 12. I know it's well known, "Hitherto hath the Lord helped us," but it is central to this passage. But there's four other verses which I wanted to take out of this passage. But first of all, just to explain the story and the context of it. The Israelites were a yo-yo nation. I don't know, that's not a term that I've ever heard a preacher use before, so I'll explain it. I'm a football fan, and you hear of yo-yo clubs, and what that means is a club that keeps getting promoted and relegated, promoted and relegated. There's one nearby, and they wear yellow and green, but we won't talk about that. But Israel's dedication and faith to the Lord was up and down all of the time, and we can see this from Samuel. We can see that Israel, sometimes they were fully dedicated to the Lord, they were offering up offerings, and sometimes they completely lost track of it. They were worshipping idols. And so we can see that from the early chapters of Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 4 and verse 11. If you turn back just a couple of pages, the ark of God was taken. Both Eli's sons were slain. It says, "The ark of God was taken, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were slain." And it says then later on in verse 22 of that chapter, "The glory has departed from Israel." I wonder what you picture that to seem like. The glory of Israel, the glory is departed from Israel. We went to the park the other day, and just as we got there, the sun had just gone down behind the clouds. It was a Friday, I think, the nicest day up until today, really. And just as it started going down, you could feel the temperature drop. And I picture it to be similar to this, that the temperature had just dropped, the glory, you could feel it disappear, something was missing. But to understand this passage as well, you need to understand the Ark of the Covenant, you need to understand what that's about. And if you could quickly turn with me to 1 Kings chapter 8, it gives a bit of an understanding about the Ark. 1 Kings in chapter 8 and verse 10 and 11, the Ark had just been brought into the temple, and it says here, in verse 11, "So the priests could not stand to minister because of the cloud, for the glory of the Lord had filled the house of the Lord." And so the Ark of the Covenant, the presence of the Ark of the Covenant there, symbolized God's presence among the people of Israel. And we can see that presence throughout Samuel. In chapter 5, we can see the impact when the Philistines had taken the Ark. The beginning of it is Dagon. Dagon was a god. I believe it was the god of fish. But he was definitely a god anyway, and Dagon was destroyed when the ark was there. Ashdod, that's a place, Gath, that's a place, and Ekron, another place in Palestine or near Palestine, were all afflicted when the ark of the Lord was there. And so the impact of the ark of the Lord being in the wrong place was that there was torment in these places. They were destroyed and they were afflicted. And so at the end of chapter 6, verse 21, we can see that the ark had been returned back to the Israelites, but it hadn't been brought back to the right place, the place that it should have been. In verse 21 it says, "The Philistines have brought again the ark of the Lord. Come ye down and fetch it up to you." And so they were to bring it back to the place where it was to be. And so linking that to today, we know that we have a symbol of God's presence today, the Bible. When we are around the Bible, we can feel that God is blessing us. And when we read the Bible, we can feel it's blessed. But it wasn't put in the right place. It's not put in the right place today in our society. And the same here, that it wasn't in the right place. And so this passage here that we have, chapter 7, onwards from that point, is very relevant today. So they were grieved about the state of the nation. It says that in verse 2 of chapter 7. "All the house of Israel lamented after the Lord." And so we can see that Israel were very upset. They could see about the impact of not having the Lord there. You can see that they turned away from the Lord's things and that they were grieved about it. We can see that our nation has departed from the Lord's things. But do we grieve about it? Do we really feel the impact of it? And do we pray about the situation? Do we try and make an impact in that? Do we share the gospel with our friends and with the people that we know, that our colleagues? Are we grieving for the situation in the same way that they are here? And so there's just a brief summary there of the situation that they were in. The Ark of the Lord had been returned back to the Israelites. It wasn't in the right place, but It had been returned back, and Israel as a nation was in a bad place. It was grieved. And so there's four verses, as I said, that I'd just like to focus on today. They all have something in common. They all start, my points start all with words beginning with RE. So return, ready, recognition, and restored. And I'll explain them a little bit more. First one is from verse 3. If you do return unto the Lord with all your hearts, then put away your the strange gods. If you do return unto the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the strange gods. We said before about a yo-yo, something going away and then coming back to where it had started. Now, if you're good at the yo-yo, you spin it down and then it comes back without you moving your hand. The hand is where it was before. And so it's to return back to where it was from before. We speak quite often about brave preaching, or maybe not so brave preaching. You go into a church and there's no mention of sin, no mention of judgment, no mention of hell, just preaching good things, heaven, and not explaining what you need to get there. But this is an example of Samuel preaching a harsh topic here. He's not preaching to the unconverted, he's preaching to God's people. And here he's saying, you've departed. And that is a brave preaching, isn't it? A brave preaching to say to God's people, not only have you done what's wrong, you've departed completely from God, and you need to return unto the Lord. And so to return unto the Lord, you need to have departed originally. It shows that God hadn't changed, that God had remained where he was, but it was the Israelites that had moved away. We see that in 1 Samuel chapter 2. Eli's sons, we've got quite a description here of how they misused the offerings and how they misused their position in the temple. It says in verse 12, now the sons of Eli were sons of Belial. They knew not the Lord. And so that's not really a great start, is it? If the people that have a position of power in the temple didn't know the Lord, and we can see the impact of that, then what happened to Israel? And that's why God spoke to Samuel. We know that passage very well, don't we? It's called Samuel. Here am I, Samuel said, but he didn't realise that it was God speaking. Samuel had a message that he needed to give to Eli from the Lord, and it was down to how Israel had departed from the Lord. And so we can see that they had departed and that they needed to return. We can see that God does not change. We know that passage, don't we, in Malachi. I am the Lord, I change not. God's ways hadn't changed. It was the Israelites that had moved away. See, Samuel often reminded the Israelites about what God had done for them in the past. And I'm sure that's what Samuel was preaching to them over these 20 years. I feel certain that it says about 20 years, and I'll keep referring to that. 20 years is a long time when you don't have the presence of God and you don't feel that God's work is being done there, which is how Israel had departed and the stage that they got to. But I'm sure that Samuel was preaching. Samuel was sent by God, and I'm sure that he was preaching to the people that they needed to return, not just this time, but he'd done that for many years before. But Samuel often reminded the Israelites about what God had done for them in the past. And we can see that with other people, people of God. We know that Moses, he reminded the Israelites when they were waiting and being chased by the Egyptians. We could see that Moses reminded them of what the Lord had done for them. Remember that David spoke often in his Psalms about remember what the Lord had done for them. And so that's something that we can remember if we're feeling far from God and we need to return back to the ways of God and what God has taught us, then we need to remember what God has done for us. That's a great starting place that we can see from Samuel here. But Samuel says this to them, if you do return unto the Lord with all your hearts. He's saying hearts, isn't he? He was speaking to everyone. And that's why I think here it is. You can imagine him speaking, saying to all of them, but also it was applicable to them as individual. He says, your hearts. And so Samuel was saying that's an individual thing which they had to do. It was their own responsibility, the Israelites, to return back to the Lord. See, Samuel often talks about the heart. If you turn to 1 Samuel chapter 16, just a few pages on, another well-known passage. This is where Samuel was going to anoint a new king. You might even know it without turning to it, really, but he went through the sons of Jesse at the time, trying to see which one the Lord had as a plan for a king. And obviously, eventually, he ended up with David. But if you look at verse 7, he says this, and we refer to this quite often, for the Lord seeth not as man seeth, for man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. Samuel had this real understanding that the Lord looks on the heart, and that that was something that people loved. The heart is what we love. You see, if the Israelites had these strange gods, which Samuel told them to put away, you can't love the gods and you can't love God at the same time. They had to be put away. They had to be returned back to the things that God had taught them. These gods which they'd looked at, if you look at verse 4, it mentions Baalim and Ashtaroth. Again, just as a bit of a context, Baalim was the god of the ground. So crops, essentially similar to vegetarians and people that speak about vegetarians and veganism and things like that in the wrong way these days. It's a very similar situation that they would worship the ground, and Baalim was the god of the ground. And so we can see this is very relevant today. Same with Ashtaroth. Ashtaroth was the god of fertility and of sex. And so it was exactly the same situation that we're in today, where these things which shouldn't be worshipped in the way that they were worshipped in the time of Israel. Samuel faced the same issues as we do today. And so it was relevant that they had to return back to the one true God from these things. Ethan read that passage from Judges chapter 10. And it's exactly the same wording. If you look at verse 16, this was after Israel cried unto the Lord. I mean, don't really need to turn to it if not, but in verse 16 it says, "And they put away the strange gods from among them and served the Lord, and his soul was grieved for the misery of Israel." That's very similar to the passage that we've got here. Samuel says, if you do return unto the Lord with all your heart, put away the strange gods. And that's what Samuel was having to tell Israel again. Judges 10 was written about 1100 BC. Samuel was about 1000 BC. It was a little bit less than that. So 48 years between them as an estimate. And Judges 2, which is very similar as well, which we could look at as well, but we won't at this moment. That was about 250 years before. So when I say a yo-yo nation, they kept returning to the same things. This was something that continually went on and on. So you can't grieve for the land if you hold those things dear. So the first thing which Samuel had to say to the Israelites was for them to return to the Lord. If you do return unto the Lord with all your hearts, you've got to put those things away, put those gods away. And so we have a message here to return. But secondly, a message to be ready. If you look at verse 3 later on, "And prepare your hearts unto the Lord and serve him only." To prepare means to make ready. It reminds me of the verse from Amos, which we know well. Prepare to meet thy God. What do we think of God when we think of him? What comes to our mind? There was a story which I read and I had heard before, actually. There was a man and his wife from Vancouver, and they were recently married, and his wife was a piano major in University of British Columbia. And so they went piano shopping for their new house to go and buy a nice piano for it. And the saleswoman led them directly to the cheaper pianos, entry level. And the man, when he was telling this story, said, "She judged us exactly right. We didn't have any money. We were going to borrow the money to get the cheapest instrument that was there." But the wife in conversation mentioned her mentor, which was a world-renowned master teaching at the university. He came up in conversation, and suddenly this saleswoman panicked. Her smile dropped, and she said, not these pianos. She was herding them away from the economy section and moved them towards the nice, shiny pianos in a completely different section. She kept saying, I'm sorry, at the thought that the teacher might find out that he'd sent one of them to an inferior instrument. And as much as they were saying that we don't have the money, we can't afford these more expensive ones, take us back to the other ones, she wouldn't do that. And once the master's name came up, only the best would do. She only wanted to try and sell them the ones that were the best. See, in the same way, what do we think of God? What do we think when we hear his name? Do we think of God as he's described here and later on in the chapter, "Hitherto hath the Lord helped us, the powerful God has helped us against the Philistines," or do we think less of him? When we come to the Lord with reverence and fear, we should think of him in that way. There's a well-known verse in our hymn books. "What think ye of Christ is a test, to try both your state and your scheme." But then there's this after that: "You cannot be right in the rest unless you think rightly of him." And so Samuel here is telling them to prepare your hearts unto the Lord, to be ready to meet the Lord, to cry unto him and serve him only. And so after they had returned unto the Lord, got rid of their gods, they had to be ready to speak to the Lord. And see, we can see that they did this in verse 6. If you look at verse 6, we have sinned against the Lord. They accepted their sin here. They recognized their sin. And that's what we should do as a Christian, recognizing our sin and being aware of it. But also where it says about serving him, it reminded me of the second commandment. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. But then it goes on to say this in Exodus, for I, the Lord, thy God, am a jealous God. I think that's such an amazing passage. I think that's such an amazing way that we've got a jealous God, one that cares about us enough. Not only that he demands that we serve him, but only serve him. I think that's an amazing thought, that the God that created everything, he cares about the fact that we just serve him. And that's a special feeling for a Christian, that God demands only him to be served. But it also encourages us to know him as well. If you look at this passage, prepare your hearts unto the Lord and serve him only. It encourages us to get to know him. How can you prepare your hearts unto the Lord if you don't know God and you don't know what God expects? It makes us want to learn more about him. Samuel knows him. You can see that Samuel knows him because he goes on later into the verse to say, he will deliver you. He knows the power of God. He knows what God can do. He would have read about Moses and the Israelites coming out of Egypt, know about the power there. And so this army of Philistines would have been nothing compared to what God had done before. And so we can see that Samuel was ready. He knew God. He knew what God could do. And he was telling the Israelites to prepare your hearts and serve him only. And so we have a message here to be ready as well. Thirdly, if we look at verse 8, this is the recognition, recognizing who God is. Cease, the children of Israel speaking this time, cease not to cry unto the Lord our God for us, that he will save us out of the hand of the Philistines. See, lamenting itself or grieving alone wasn't enough. Neither was just preparing. They couldn't just be sad for the situation that they were in. Many people out in our nation today are just sad about the situation that they're in. Many people know that the world isn't as good as it was, and they can see that there's something wrong, but they don't recognise that the country has departed from God. But also preparing wasn't enough. They weren't just to be ready to speak to God, but they had to actually speak to God themselves. And here Samuel was speaking to God on their behalf. They were saying, cease not to cry unto the Lord our God for us. Didn't want them to stop. They had a recognition of God. They had a dependence on God. God was the only one that could save them. They recognized that God could save them. What do they say? That he will save us out of the hand of the Philistines. I also like boxing as well as football. And in boxing, I find it strange sometimes they put in rematch clauses. So if one boxer loses to another boxer, they can demand a rematch if they're expected to win. And I don't really understand that, because if someone beats you and in the first one, why you'd want to fight them again, I don't really know. But it's similar here. The Philistines were coming onto the Israelites, and they knew that the Philistines were stronger than them. It says in 1 Samuel chapter 4, verse 2, Israel was smitten or defeated. And so they knew the power of the Philistines. The Philistines' army had enough to take them on. And we can see the impact of that. If you look in verse 7 of chapter 7, it says that the children of Israel, when they heard it, that the Philistines were gathering, when they heard it, they were afraid of the Philistines. I wonder what it is that you're afraid of today. I wonder what it is that God has allowed to come our way, that is challenging us, what it is that we need to go to God with. But they knew that God could save. They knew who God was and recognised that he could save them. Thinking about Jesus as the way, the truth and the life, to take it in a slightly different way, sometimes we need to recognise what Jesus can do. Recognise that Jesus is the only way to salvation. Have an understanding of Jesus. Recognising that what he spoke was the truth, and if anyone speaks away from him, it's not the truth. Recognising that he's a life, he's the only way to heaven, only way to eternal life, as he spoke. And Christians sometimes don't completely take the Bible as it is, not maybe the salvation way, but sometimes they divert differently. For example, creation. Sometimes people, Christians, although they understand the message of salvation, they don't fully believe in the creation story, the creation account. Sometimes try and mix science into it completely. But recognizing that God, and I haven't explained it very well, but my link between God saving them from the Philistines and God creating the world is recognizing what God could do. I hope that clarifies it a bit better. Recognizing what God can do and recognizing the power of God. They would have known the power of God because they would have believed in the creation story. They would have believed what Moses had been through, what many others, Abraham and so on. I love the story of Moses, so I keep referring to it. But Abraham, Joseph, Isaac, what they would have gone through. And they would have known that and recognized it. And we have the same today. We have a recollection and an account of salvation, an account that Jesus died on the cross and that he rose on the third day. And we can, from that, we can know who God is and that he's powerful to get us through anything that we're afraid of. We also have an example here of free will. Some people struggle with understanding what free will and what sovereignty is. And I think this is a great example here. You see, God let them go astray for 20 years until the point that they realized that they needed God, but also that God was sovereign. We can see that God sent a prophet into them, their midst in Samuel, sent Samuel into their lives. And this takes us right back to the story of Hannah. Hannah praying for a son. We can remember that she said that she would dedicate his life to God. And that's exactly what she did. God blessed that, and God used Samuel in a particular way here. And so we have an example of free will and recognizing that God is in control as well. But also there's another thing that they recognize. Recognize that God hears the cries of Samuel. We see that the children of Israel said, "Cease not to cry unto the Lord our God for us." So cease not to cry. You see, if they didn't recognize that God could hear them, there'd be no point in spending time to cry. Again, going back to that story of the Israelites and the Egyptians, the people were more worried about a way to get out. They were more worried about which way they could go round the sea and not recognizing that God could get them through that situation. And here it's the opposite. The Israelites knew that the only way that God would hear their cries and that he would get them through. We read that psalm at the beginning, Psalm 40, in the first three verses, which are so well known. And something quite amazing here is a testimony. We've got in verse 1, "I waited patiently for the Lord." This is David speaking. "I waited patiently for the Lord." In the verse 2, it says, "He brought me up out of a horrible pit, out of a miry clay." And in verse 3, we've got the end, "He hath put a new song in my mouth." So we've got a testimony there of David, that it all starts with hearing the cry. He heard my cry. It starts with God hearing them. And we have the same promise today. We have what Paul wrote in 1 Thessalonians, "Pray without ceasing." Faithful prayers don't stop. If you want something from God and it's in God's will, pray for it more. Pray for it longer and see what God has to do with us. And so a recognition here that God was in control, that God could hear the prayers and God had the power to do that. And then fourthly, restored. If you look at verse 13, "The hand of the Lord was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel." That's a powerful ending, isn't it? A powerful way. The Israelites had returned. They'd prepared themselves. They were ready. They'd recognized that God was the one that was in control. And now the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines, the people that they were afraid of, all the days of Samuel. If I turn this round and we say, what feelings would a human feel if he was in God's position? Say God was, say a human was in that position, someone had turned away, stopped serving the God, the real God, and had other gods, Baal and the other ones that we spoke about here. How would that person feel? Would they feel let down, betrayed? Same way, maybe if you said it about Adam and Eve, how would a human feel in that situation? They've been created and then let God down. They feel let down and betrayed. But here we have an amazing message, an amazing answer. The restoration was greater than they deserved. They'd let God down, but God restored them. We have a direct answer here. Verse 8, it was that he will save us out of the hands of the Philistines. And here we have a direct answer. The hand of the Lord was against the Philistines. We can see that the hand of God is stronger than the hand of the Philistines. I think it's amazing that there's the same word in there, hand of the Philistines and hand of the Lord. A direct comparison. The word of God and God's power is much stronger than the enemy. But God's answer is always, restoration is always greater. It reminded me when I was thinking of this, of Matthew chapter 25, another well-known passage. It's a story of the talents. Matthew chapter 25, it starts at verse 14. But if we just skip, we know the passage, don't we, that one was given five talents, one was given two, and one was given one. But if you look at the five and the two, which is in verse 20 and 21, and then in 22 and 23, the person who was given two talents, if we take them for example, the Lord said to him, yeah, you've gained two other talents. The Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I'll make thee ruler over many things. He'd only gained two talents. I know that that was exactly what the Lord at that time had expected of him, but he'd only gained two talents, but he was made ruler over many things. And God's restoration, God's reward, and the things that God gives us are always much greater than we deserve. And here we can see that the children of Israel were restored back to an untouchable nation. The same protection that Gideon was given. When Gideon fought them with just a few men, he had an army of many more, but he fought them with just a few men. Gideon had that same protection. Same as Daniel. Daniel was just one man in a den of lions. Didn't stand a chance in human thinking, but he had the same protection that was shown here as well. And God's protection and his restoration restored back to an untouchable nation. You see, it reminds me of that verse in Romans, if God be for us, who can be against us? There was no way here. When they turned to God, God had promised, or they cried out to God, and God promised that he would be against the Philistines for the rest of the days of Samuel. There was no way that anything could have happened. When I was thinking about how to sum this up, I initially thought of reward as one, but I don't think that's the right word in this. It's not earned. There's nothing that the Israelites have done to earn this at all. Realistically, they turned away for 20 years, 20 long years, and finally hear that they'd listened to Samuel and started crying unto the Lord again. But it was returned back to exactly as it was, just like a piece of furniture. It was restored back how it would. If you restore a piece of furniture, you bring it back how it was before. And God can restore us. Just to close, if you look at Psalm 23, a well-known psalm. If you look at verse 3, and you'll know it really without turning to it as well. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Again, that reminds us of the Israelites, doesn't it? They couldn't serve the Lord without being in the paths of righteousness. They couldn't have these gods and the things which they'd treasured before without turning back towards God. And then if you look at verse 6, similar ending to that as well. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Just like the promise that was given to Samuel, that the Philistines couldn't touch him for the rest of his life. Same here, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. I wonder whether God protected the Philistines because of a result of Samuel's faithfulness. He treasured Samuel's faithfulness, his preaching over 20 years, just like Noah's preaching over 40 years, preaching over a long time. But the same way that Samuel preached here, he would have prepared them, he would have spoken to them about the Lord's things, he'd have been brave. I'm sure that many people would have laughed at him, just like they did at Noah. I'm sure that many people would have said, turn to these gods as we have, the God of the ground and the other gods that they served. But God here rewarded them. God restored them back to the nation that they were. And so just to conclude, these four verses that we've looked at, the two parts of verse 3, the part of verse 8 and the part of verse 13, they all include the words, the Lord. So this passage here today is all about the Lord. Do you know the Lord? Do you know God? Do you know his son Jesus as your own? I did listen to a sermon on this by a well-known preacher, and his last point was anticipation. And I'm not going to use that, but I will just mention it. Anticipation. Samuel said here, hitherto hath the Lord helped us, and the Philistines were stopped. And there was anticipation of what God can do for them. And he was using it in the same way. This sermon was preached, it was the last preach in an older church before they moved into a different building, and he was saying anticipate as to what the Lord, how the Lord can bless them in the future. And I think that's exactly right here, that the Israelites from the beginning of the chapter to the end of the chapter, they've been changed completely. focusing on false gods, focusing on the things that couldn't help them, and turn into the one God by the end of it, the God that did help them. It says the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines. It wasn't just a prediction. It wasn't just a guess of what could happen. It was a certainty that God would protect them. And so we have a message here of God's amazing protection, God's amazing faithfulness to his people, even when they're not faithful. And that's the message for us today. Amen.